Welcome back to Empire's Podcast, The Ottomans. I am Frank, your host. I'd like to offer up an apology for going dark these past couple of weeks. The issue I've been having is that, well, I've been sick, and this means that I've lost my voice. So I haven't been able to really jump on this project with all the attention that it deserves. With that being said, however, some of you generous listeners out there have felt it in your heart to leave me a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. And so I'd like to take a moment and read them out for us here. The first review is by Black Hair Jackie, quote, "This is one of the better history podcasts I've come across, and I've tried many. He has a pleasant voice and keeps a good pace. Informational and entertaining without excessive frills of music and production," end quote. "I'm all about minimizing the background noise, and I try and keep everyone's focus upon the Ottomans without boring everyone to death. Thank you so much, Jackie." Next up is a review by Derlimpke, quote, "Great to have a wonderful show on the Ottoman Empire. Cheers," end quote. A brief search on Apple Podcasts revealed a few other shows out there on the Ottoman Empire. All of them are great, and I wish them the very best. And I'm humbled that you, Derlimpke, chose to listen to my show. Thank you. I'd also like to drop a shout out to Abdullah Rahman. Thank you for your email. It means a whole lot to me. And now, let's step into the truly awful world of Dracula for this special extra episode. Land of Myths and Shadows, The Life and Times of Vlad Tepes Dracula, Part 1. A while back, I let listeners in on the fact that I was working on a Halloween special, the topic of choice being the world's favorite vampire, Dracula. Thanks to me being sick, however, the release date has long since passed us. But I've done a ton of research, and I'm not going to wait around until next Halloween to drop this episode. As many of my longtime listeners are well aware, there was a historical Dracula who lived during the days of Sultan Murad II and Mehmed II in the mid-15th century. This is a podcast about the Ottoman Empire, and thus, I'll keep the focus on them. However, as with our John Hunyadi episode, there are historical characters just begging for their own episode. Vlad Dracula III of Wallachia is one such figure. I asked listeners in episode 23 how deep they like me to go in producing this extra on Dracula. Just to warn you, I ended up with over 50 pages of research on this topic. My listeners sent in about a dozen emails, and you guys provided commentary on Spotify on episode 23. The consensus seems to be that my listeners want a deep dive into the world and life of Dracula. So, with this in mind, this isn't going to be a short 20-minute segment on Dracula. This will turn into a multiple release segments of Dracula. This will allow me to continue on with the regular show without getting bogged down in a 4.5-hour long extra special. And it will have the added benefit of giving the Prince of Darkness his proper due. With that out of the way, let us begin. For most people, the story of Dracula begins in 1897 with the publication of Bram Stoker's famous novel. But if we're being honest with ourselves, most of us met Dracula in the theater. For me personally, I met the Count in the creepy horror section of Blockbuster, way back in the day during the 90s. Truth be told, in all my life, I've only ran across like 2 people who've actually read the novel Dracula. It tends to be a grind of a read, and difficult for the contemporary reader to really absorb. The author, Bram Stoker, was an Irishman with a feel for Balkan folklore. Before Stoker's day in the mid-18th century, the Ottoman Empire was in decline in the Balkans. As countries like Albania, Serbia, and parts of Bulgaria shrugged off Ottoman control, the Austrians would move in and administer the lands formerly held by the Turks. The Austrian rulers of these new lands soon began reporting tales of people opening graves and driving stakes into the corpses of their long-dead relatives. These reports would become ever more embellished with lurid scenes of bloated corpses, sorcery, witchcraft, and tales of devils flying all over the place. During the Ottoman rule in these areas, the Turkish authorities were not only aware of what was going on, but they actively encouraged these practices. The reason being, from the Ottoman administrative standpoint, was it was another divide-and-conquer strategy, because it's always far better for the Serbians to be digging up corpses and staking them, and accusing fellow villagers of vampirism, than thinking about ways to shrug off Ottoman rule. Under the Austrians, these reports made their way back to Vienna, the capital of the Austrian Empire, and then, subsequently, they became circulated over Europe, and they ended up creating a vampire obsession, one of which persists to this very day. And then, along comes Bram Stoker in the 1880s. There is a vampire craze in Europe going strong, and it never subsided. Stoker read a ton of folktales from Wallachia and Transylvania, and he is reported to have had a deep interest in Ottoman history. Scholars today are still debating on whether Stoker actually consciously based his famous Count Dracula on a historical person. Now sure, the Count shares the last name of Vlad Dracula III, but was it really him? The original historical Dracula was born and raised in Wallachia, while the Count from the novel hailed from Transylvania. Transylvania at the time was under the control of King of Hungary. And all during Dracula's life, or most of it, John Hunyadi not only ruled that region, but he would frequently invade Wallachia itself. The historical Dracula was an absolute horror show. We're going to get into the impalement, torture, and other horrendous methods of punishment and execution exacted by the real Dracula on down the line. So maybe Stoker did base something on the original guy after all. The John Hunyadi extra episode was a challenge to research and write, and a big reason for this was the political happenings in Wallachia. As one ruling member of the Dracula family would fall, come back to power again, fall again from power, flee to an allied country, he would ally with and then end up fighting against Hunyadi. It was all pretty confusing to keep track of. A good place for us to start is his name. For simplicity's sake, when referring to Vlad Dracula III, I'm going to refer to him simply as Dracula. And Vlad Dracula III is the historical one that we believe Bram Stoker based his Dracula on. Dracula was born in 1428 or 1431. Nobody is quite sure which, but we have sources for both dates. As to his mother, we're not quite sure. Some sources say that she was a princess. Other sources put her as a tavern servant. Whichever way, Dracula ended up dying in 1477. So that would put his age at 47 or 49. Not when he was 466 years old, like in Bram Stoker's novel. So right there, there's a historical difference. To make things even more confusing, Dracula was the ruler of Wallachia, and the ruler of this region was called Voivode, three separate times. That's right. Dracula would rule over Wallachia as Voivode three separate reigns. His first reign, and shortest, was from October through November of 1448. His second reign, and the longest reign, and this would be the one in which his legend was built, was from April of 1456 through July of 1462. His third and final reign, and the one which ended with his assassination, would be on June of 1475 till January of 1477. The period of Dracula's childhood, from 1440 through 1450, his three reigns as Voivode of Wallachia, and finally his death in 1477, was one of the most dangerous times to be alive in the Balkans. Not till the Second World War, in which the Balkans were an absolute hellscape of human suffering, would history have a comparable event to the chaos that was happening in the 15th century. The world of Dracula's childhood was a nightmarish place in and of itself. To the south, the Muslim superpower of the Ottoman Empire was slowly gathering strength after the interregnum and defeat of Bayezid I by Tamerlane, of which in this podcast you can check out by scrolling on down to episode 13. All of Bulgaria was under Turkish control since the late 14th century. Dracula would have heard stories about the so-called Christian boy tax, what the Ottomans referred to as Dervishermi, and refugees fleeing from Greece, Bulgaria, and southern Serbia. These poor, wretched souls would have arrived around the time Dracula was a young adult and carried with them stories of rape, torture, and slavery at the hands of the Ottoman Empire. But the Christian area north of Wallachia wasn't much better. The Hungarians were pushing into Transylvania and forced the conversion of Christian Eastern Orthodox, slaughtered any Muslims they came across, and tortured and burned alive the few remaining non-Muslim and non-Christian pagans still hanging around the mountain fastness of the country. Wallachia would have a long and contentious relationship with the Kingdom of Hungary, which Hungary sought to annex the entire region, and they meant to use it as a bulwark, a buffer zone against Ottoman expansion. The Hungarians were also constantly meddling with the internal politics of Wallachia. The King of Hungary would send support for any claimant to the voivodeship, which openly declared hostility against the Ottomans. This would spell disastrous trouble for the Dracula family on down the line. Plagues, famines, natural disasters, all of these horror stories were never far off, and everyone went to bed at night, terrified of what new horrors lay just above the morning's horizon. Poverty, bribery, graft, and theft were rampant, which would, in turn, stifle trade, shatter the local economies of villages and towns. This meant also that the voivode of Wallachia frequently couldn't raise enough money to pay his soldiers, and this would give opportunities for the Hungarians and Ottomans alike to stir up trouble in the border regions, which would create stability inside the country. During Dracula's early years, his father, I'm going to call him Vlad II for simplicity's sake, would rule as the voivode of Wallachia. Dracula's dad was the illegitimate son of Mirza I, who ruled as voivode before Vlad II. While a young man, Vlad II was forced to leave the court of his father due to his illegitimate status. It was then that he made his way to the Hungarian court and came under the watchful eye of King Sigismund of Luxembourg in Hungary. This King Sigismund could have an entire podcast series about his life and times. He was a legend even in his own day. While Vlad II was serving in the court of Sigismund, he converted from Eastern Orthodoxy to Catholicism. Hungary was, and still lives, a strong Catholic country, and Vlad II would pass on his religion to his children. Vlad II was eager to make allies in Hungary, and he built up a vast network of support, first by converting to Catholicism, as I mentioned, but also putting the idea out there to anyone who would hear him that he would be the ideal man for the King of Hungary to have in Wallachia. Vlad II advised the king he would make sure Wallachia remained a steadfast ally of the Hungarians, and more importantly, he would resist the Ottoman Empire. In 1431, the King of Hungary inducted Vlad II into the Order of the Dragon. It was a military Catholic order that the Vlads would later alter their last name, and hence, this is where we get the name Dracula from, and what has thankfully saved me from researching the convoluted patronymic lineage of the Dracula family. Vlad II's ascension into the Order of the Dragon would have seismic consequences for not just himself, but for his son, Dracula, in the future. It would be a sore source of contention with Ottoman sultans, and would always tie the Dracula family to the dynasty in Hungary, for better or worse. While providing prestige and limited military aid, it was also a measuring stick of loyalty for the Dracula family. Any treaty, however favorable to Wallachia might prove with the Ottomans, it would be in stark contrast to the oaths taken by Dracula as a member of the Order. So, what, you may ask, what was the Order of the Dragon? In those days, the Catholic Church commissioned and supported religious military orders with the express purposes of fighting the Muslim invaders. They first popped up during the First Crusade to the Holy Land, and really, they've never really gone away. In fact, after the Muslim Wars, these military orders gradually transformed into charity organizations, with members counted among Europe's most select and elite aristocracy. The Order of the Dragon was established by King Sigismund of Hungary in 1408. After the Crusaders defeated Nicopolis, of which you guys can listen to in episode 10 on this podcast, it was decided, after analyzing the defeat, that what was needed was a military order meant to accomplish three main things. King Sigismund needed a military Catholic order which would tie the high-ranking nobility to the Hungarian dynasty. At Nicopolis, there had been a breakdown in the high command of the Crusaders, which led directly to the battlefield defeat. If Sigismund could establish a military order and make the leading nobles in his area swear oaths, then any future crusade would have to come under the king's direct leadership. So his reasoning at the time went. Second, one strategy employed by the clever Ottoman Sultan Murad I, and a tactic later adapted by his successors, was to divide the Christian powers by signing separate treaties with them. The Ottomans would give favorable concessions to Serbia versus Wallachia, for example. The end result is that the Catholic Christian powers always found themselves internally divided whenever the Ottomans showed up on their borders with an army. And the Ottomans had the luxury of only having to face down one power at a time. A striking example of this Ottoman policy in Dracula's own day was Serbia signing a peace treaty with Murad II and refusing to aid and even actively fighting against a crusade launched against the Ottomans. The Crusaders ended up defeated at what history calls the Second Battle of Kosovo. As a result of these past defeats, and very aware of the Ottomans' clever use of diplomacy, one oath of the Order of the Dragon was that nobody would sign a peace treaty, however favorable, with the Ottomans. There were to be no treaties, no peace. The king realized that all of the Balkans needed to unite against this Ottoman threat. Peace would only provide the Ottomans time with which to build up an army and move in and conquer everybody. Number three, the king needed a way of recognizing the very real bravery that was displayed on the battlefield against the Ottomans. Sure, the luxurious princes of the realm would be invited into his society, but also, the king opened the doors to the daring knights, and also some regular foot soldiers who had really put a hurtin' on the Turks. This is one reason why it became so popular, and long after its military effectiveness had waned. The order remained active with families, proudly adding the dragon to their coat of arms up till the mid-19th century. The order flourished in Germany and Italy during Sigismund's day. Its most active members would be the knights, young princes, and rulers of regions like Poland, Serbia, and Wallachia, due to the fact that these areas were frequently up on the Ottoman chopping block. Members would be brought before King Sigismund personally, and he hand-selected who would join the order in his lifetime. The prospects would be brought into a Catholic church, and before the Holy Eucharist, Sigismund would use a ceremonial sword, a sword of which is still around, and which you can see in a museum in Vienna to this very day. The same sword which once rested upon the shoulders of Vlad II and Dracula themselves. With the ceremonial sword, the Prospects would swear an oath before God, to fight the Ottoman Empire, never sign a truce with any sultan, defy any Eastern Orthodox ruler attempting to rule lands Hungary had a claim upon, and to wage war on any pagan still hanging around in the Balkans. After taking the oath before the king and other assembled members of the order, the newly minted dragon would enjoy the special perks going along with membership. The first perk, and most important, was access to King Sigismund and his descendants for life. This would be a major perk Dracula would take advantage of when he was taken prisoner by the Hungarians later in life. Second, would come honors and social acclaim, no mean thing back in the medieval ages. And finally, a lump sum of money. The society was so prestigious in the Catholic world that Vlad II changed his family's last name to Dracula, as I mentioned earlier. The Order of the Dragon had 2 degrees. The first were comprised of the original 21 founding members, which included King Sigismund himself. The second was open to knights who had displayed bravery on the battlefield. And added to the second degree were the influential nobles, like Dracula, from surrounding lands. If you check out the show's thumbnail for this episode in Spotify, you'll see that I put in a picture on the image of the order's emblem, a dragon. This imagery came from the fact that St. George, according to Catholic legend, slew a dragon, representing the powers of the devil. I have an interesting side note for you too. Did you know that the Order of the Dragon is still technically around today? Although it doesn't officially convey membership any longer, that stopped hundreds of years ago, its copyright is held by an organization registered in London, England, called, quote, the Holy Roman Empire Association, end quote. When I researched this organization, I found it to be a nonprofit that controls the copyrights of many old Catholic religious orders. Anyway, I just thought that was pretty cool to throw in there. Next time, in part 2 of Land of Myth and Shadows, The Life and Times of Vlad Tepes Dracula, I plan on covering Vlad II's detainment in the Ottoman Empire, the young adulthood of Dracula in the Ottoman lands, and his father's death. The regular show covering the reign of Mehmed II will roll on. And when I say roll on, I mean we are going to conquer Constantinople. I'm hoping to have this episode out next week. Hopefully these Dracula extras will coincide with Mehmed II's reign. After all, the two men were strong contemporaries of each other, and they knew one another on a deeply personal level. Until then, thank you for stopping by.